You're listening to Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
Hey guys, this is the Kappa Black Student Union hosting Streaming Justice. I am London.
I'm Alexis.
I'm Alana.
And I'm Marna.
And we're here to talk about how Ferguson is the new civil rights movement.
I think that Ferguson definitely has planted a seed that could possibly be the new civil rights movement, but I don't want to call it that because I don't want it to make it seem like there ever was a period of time when we weren't fighting for, you know, our rights just everywhere, all across the board, not just black people, but just, you know, people who are different than, you know, what people, I guess, different from, like, even just as far as, like, gay rights and, like, stuff like that, like, we have all been fighting. So I think that, you know, this is just the movement continued.
So. Yeah. I feel like there was a dull period, though. I feel like there was a point where the movement started and then it kind of, like, died down for a long time. And I feel like it was sort of like a low burning fire. And I feel like the Trayvon Martin incident kind of like brought it back. And then it was just like, it's not really going to happen yet. But I think after the issue in Ferguson with Mike Brown, I feel like after that happened, I feel like now people are like, okay, enough is enough.
Yeah, especially with like the deaths of Eric Garner and Tamir Rice too, like that intensified the issue, I think. And now I feel like people are ready to see a change, definitely. And so a lot of people are like taking to the streets and like protesting and stuff.
I know a lot of people were, I think it was CNN, they were watching Ferguson on TV, and you saw like the ethnics going into the stores, breaking them down, stealing liquor, busting windows. How does that make you feel to see that? And you know all you want is a change.
Well, me personally, I'm not gonna throw shade or like, you know what I'm saying? Or like even be shameful in that, because you have to understand where all of that came from in the beginning. What started
it was
that,
all anger.
Exactly. I'm not going to shame people for feeling any type of way about what has happened in their community, regardless of if they want to tear it up or not. So that's, I mean, you know what I'm saying? I'm not from there. I can't, you know what I'm saying? I wasn't on the front lines. And a lot of things, especially in the mainstream media, it's filled with propaganda and filled with things that kind of morph people's way of thinking that it's only one-sided, but it's really not. So I wasn't there. I don't know exactly what happened, and I'm not going to shame them for acting out on that, because that's a place of pain.
Yeah.
There's always like the argument too that like this issue isn't as important because we have like black on black crime that's going on and stuff. Like, what do you guys think about that? Like,
it's invalid.
And it's so rude.
And I think black on black crime, I don't completely believe that it's invalid. I believe that there's two sides to everything. There's like two sides to everything. Yes, I feel like y'all shouldn't be tearing up y'all shouldn't be like beating up on each other, but I think it also stems from years and years and years of oppression. Like, nobody ever teaches students that black students that before we came to America, one, we didn't come here willingly. Two, before we came here, we were kings and queens and had sat in high places. And I don't think they teach us that. So because they're ignorant of their past and they don't really know where they came from, the roots are not grounded enough to be able to stand on the front lines and say, hey, we're going to stand together, because they really have not seen unity.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Not only that.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. It's like a lot deeper than that. Like, it's more real than just like people killing people. Like, it has to do with poverty, and it has to do with education, and it has to do with like everything that's like playing a role in this.
And look what's showing up in the music, the TV. Mm-hmm. There's thugs and gangsters, so-called thugs and gangsters everywhere. Like, and when you're a young boy growing up and you see like that guy's hard, like, look what he's doing. He's controlling these people. He has all this money coming to him. You're going to want to be just like that, right? If anything.
And not to say it's not a problem. Like, it definitely is a problem.
It is a problem.
It's just, you know, this is a problem too, and it needs to be addressed.
I mean, I agree with everything that you guys have said, but the reason why I say that that argument is invalid is because, like, in like the system itself, if a black person kills another black mm-hmm. person, then they are going to jail. If a police officer kills anybody, then they are not going to jail. Yeah. And mm-hmm. that's even, you know, questionable, because there have been times when black police officers have been targeted off, you know, while they're not on duty. Right. So, mm-hmm. I mean, how far, how deep, you know, a lot of people say, like, this issue is not a race issue, but if you,
it
I
really
mean,
is.
You really have to, and, like, I understand that it may be uncomfortable for certain people to talk about this, but the people that are uncomfortable are the people that really need to talk about this and really need to just open their eyes and be open-minded to the things that, just because it may not be your experience, doesn't mean that racism is a figment of our imagination, because mm-hmm. this is our reality every single day.
Right. There's the whole idea that, like, America is in a post-racial society. Like, what do you guys think about that? Like, what do you?
Well, I don't think that is true mm-hmm. whatsoever, because if we were in a post-racial society, we wouldn't have people who are scared to have these discussions.
Right.
Yeah.
It's always a touchy topic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's my thought. But
that entire idea is just, like, detrimental to me. Like, why are we, like, mm-hmm. Slavery didn't happen that long ago, and so we should always recognize that, like, it's still a problem, you know? Like, we can't just get over things that quickly.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where people are trying to cover up what it actually really is, and they're right. trying mm-hmm. to, like, sweep it under the rug.
Yeah.
But it's like, one of those things, you sweep the dirt under the rug, and if you sweep it under there for years and years and years, pretty soon there's going to be a big lump there, and you're not going to be able to cover it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think now we're at that point where you cannot cover it up anymore.
Yeah, definitely.
And on that note, we're going to get back into some music. We're going to play some Lauryn Hill. Keep it.
Don't keep it locked. Don't keep it locked.
It's funny how money changes situations. Miscommunication lead to complication. My emancipation don't fit your equation. I was on the humble, you on every station. Someone play young Lauryn like she done. But remember not to game the one of the sun. Everything you did has already been done. I know all the tricks from bricks to Kingston. My ting done major, King Don Juan Ron. Now understand El Boogie, not violent. But if a thing test me, run for me gun. Can't take a threat to me newborn son. El been this way since creation. A groupie call you far from temptation. Now you on ball over separation. Tarnish my image in the conversation. Who you gon' scrimmage like you the champion? You might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some, but you just lost one. Now, how come your talk turned cold? Gain the whole world for the price of your soul. Trying to grab hold of what you can't control. Now you all lost with a sight to behold. Wisdom is better than silver and gold. I was hopeless, now I'm on hope roll. Every man wanna act like he's exempt. Need to get down on his knees and repent. Can't slick talk on the day of judgment. The movement's similar to a serpent. Try to play straight how your whole style been. Consequences, no coincidence. Hypocrites always wanna play innocent. Always wanna take it to the full out extent. Always wanna make it seem like good intent. Never wanna face it when it's time for punishment. I know you don't wanna hear my opinion. There come many paths and you must choose one. And if you don't change, then the rain soon comes. See, you might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some. Pretend
pretend like your word is your bond, but until you do right, all you do will go wrong. Now some might mistake this just a simple song, and some don't know what they have till it's gone. Now even when you're gone, you can still be reborn, and from the night can arrive the sweet dawn. Now some might listen and some might shine, and some may think that they've reached perfection. If you look closely, you'll see what you become, cause you might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some, but you just lost one.
You might win some, but you really lost one. You just lost one. It's so silly. How come when it's all done, did you really gain from what you done, done? It's so silly. How come you might win some, but you really lost one? You just lost one. It's so silly. How come when it's all done, did you really gain from what you done, done? It's so silly. How come you just lost one? You just lost one. You just lost one. You just lost one. You just lost one.
So
you just lost one. You just lost one. You just lost one. What a bum bum.
Alright people, I'm gonna write something on the board. Let's spell it. First letter.
L O
What's that?
Love.
What?
Love.
How many people know any songs about love?
Right here. I know a lot about love.
Tell me some titles. Titles. What's some song?
Love.
It's a song called Love.
Yeah.
It's no song called
Love. It's by Kirk Franklin.
All right. What is it? How it go?
It go love. Love. It goes.
But go ahead. Go ahead. Okay. Anybody else's only song you know about love?
I will always love.
I can't hear you.
I will always love.
What about any movies about love? You know any movies about love?
Love,
love,
Titanic.
Alright.
Romeo and Juliet.
Did you know that was about love when you saw that?
You're listening to Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future. And hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
Kappa's Black Student Union, and we're going to be talking about some of the solutions to the issues of police brutality that are going on across our country right now. Our first one is diversity, and we discovered in research that our police force in Pittsburgh is 85% white officers and 13% black officers, and the other races are like hardly represented at all. So like, what do you guys think about that?
That's very upsetting.
It is. No, like I just like want to go over the numbers again. Not even the percentage, like the ridiculous amount of numbers. So there are 755 Caucasian officers. There are 7 Hispanic officers, 117 black officers, 6 Asian officers, and 1 Indian American officer. Like,
that's actually insane.
It makes me feel some type of way, because in this world we are a huge melting pot. How can our police force, who are supposed to be protecting us, not reflect that mm-hmm. at all? And it blows my mind how most of the officers that are here in our city are not even from our, like, they don't know anything about us. Most of them are from like Greensburg or further out, and they're coming to Pittsburgh to patrol these areas and don't know anything about the community.
Exactly.
So it just blows my mind.
Yeah, cultural context are super important. Like, if you don't know like the people that you're supposed to be protecting, then you can't protect them. Like, you have to know like the situations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know, that's really hard.
And like, I just have, it's just been something that I've been thinking about lately, because I try to stay away from like big news like broadcasting stations, because it seems like they're trying really, really hard to do what the police officers aren't doing, which is like trying to, I guess, show like police officers humanity, like there was like, and it's been on the news for like a couple days now, this police officer who was singing along to a Taylor Swift song. And I'm like, why is this news? Like,
or
why?
Like the police why? Are twerking.
But I'm like, why do we care about like what these police officers are doing? We care about what the police officers aren't doing. That's what we care about. And I think that like, that just shows like how hard it is to get, I don't know, get the truth out there.
Yes. And another thing is like, you know, if you had an officer who was in your community and knew like you, if I was like downtown by Crazy Mocha, there's a bus stop, the G2. And one day I was actually catching the G2. And the police officer said, get off the corner, keep it moving, go to the bus stop. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, this is a bus stop. Like, duh. And he was like, you're loitering. I'm like, "What? How am I loitering at the bus stop?
Right.
You're in front of a business." I was like, well, then where do you want me to stand? And the bus stop's in front of the business. This bus stop's been here longer than Crazy Mocha.
I feel like when you are out to protect someone, you have to know them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this police are here to serve and protect. Yes. However, like London said, they really don't know their community. They don't know. So, and I think it's one of those things where they really don't take the time to get to know, and they really don't involve themselves with the community. I think if they involve themselves with the community and try to incorporate the community, like let's say, I don't know, like try to go to like community events or do different things where they are helping instead of hurting and hindering mm-hmm. things from happening, like, you know what I mean?
Right. I feel like, you know, they don't know the people that they're protecting, so then whenever they do things like just straight up kill people or shoot people, they use this kind of, they blame it on fear. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, mm-hmm. they're coming into someone else's community, and since they don't know these people, that gives them the right to protect themselves because they don't know the community. Right. So I feel like that in like its own way is just, it's just a really mm-hmm. bad excuse, because there's just no reason why like you should feel threatened by a 12-year-old boy. And I don't care if you think that the color of his skin makes him look older or whatever, because honestly, it's the reverse. Black don't crack. But but I wish that,
oh my goodness,
I wish there was nothing to blame it on. Like, I wish they just would try to not, or just give up trying to justify mm-hmm. these killings and this brutality.
Yeah.
I think one possible solution could just be like mandating that either police officers like do community service like in mm-hmm. the neighborhoods where they serve, or that they like have to do cultural sensitivity training, like mm-hmm. you know, like an extensive amount to learn about the people who they're going to be protecting and serving. Like, that's super important.
They also need training in, like, I have, my uncle has autism,
mm-hmm.
and as a person who has autism or a disability, they might twitch, or they might like, they in fear they might run.
Right.
So you're going to kill somebody who you might not even know has a disability.
Mm-hmm.
Get to
mm-hmm.
know the person. Do every possible thing you can do to not resort to killing and taking a life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything. And not only diversity in the police force, can we have some diversity in these schools, guys?
Yes.
Yeah. Please. Yes. I just need a teacher who is from my community, understands where we all are coming from, mm-hmm. and wants to teach us and get us our diplomas.
Literally. You know what? There was it wasn't an incident, but there was a conversation in my AP US history class last year. At some point, the African-American students began to get a little frustrated. And one of the students said, "Why are you teaching me this now? We've learned that we were oppressed for many, many years. There is no point in telling me the same thing over and over again for 12 years. All you're doing is oppressing me over and over again. So why are you continuing to do this to us? Why won't you tell me what happened in Africa before they began bringing over slaves? Why don't you tell me the history of what happened there? Why are you only telling me slave stories, or mm-hmm. stories like during slavery? Because that only does nothing but bring us further down. You're not teaching us our importance. You're teaching us white privilege."
Yeah.
And at our school, like, we only have, like, one black teacher in our entire school. And that's across our district. Like, we have, and the way that it is that, like, when kids don't see people who look like them and they're not being taught by people who look like them and they don't have role models to look up to, it affects, like, how they feel in school. Like, they have no one to turn to, and it hurts. Like, it legitimately does.
And there's only one teacher I could think of who taught me, like, a history of our community, like the Hill District, and that's Mr. Loscotch. Shout out to Mr. Loscotch. He showed us the Hill before, like, it became, like, the Hill. Like, it was just, like, he showed us, like, the, like, how things have changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, like, was it gentrification?
Yeah,
gentrification. Yeah, and it's happening everywhere, like, celebrity.
Yes.
The Zone 5 area in general
from my
is
house.
Crazy. That's celebrity, Larmer, Linking Lemington, is it Garfield?
Yeah.
It's
they're trying to call it Shady Side East, but no, it's Garfield.
I've never heard of that day in my life. I've never would have thought of that.
It's crazy.
This
what they'll
crazy.
Come up with.
I heard the other day Penn Hills was like Upper Homewood. I said, what? Like, I've never heard of these things a day in my life. So I don't know. It seems like ever since they took down the busway and made it to like this futuristic busway, things are now all turning upside down.
I mean, it's just all for money and businesses.
And there's people coming in here who don't even know us, looking at us like we're strangers.
Exactly. Yeah. What bothers me is that you're coming into my community and you're not giving anything back, and I feel like that's an issue. If you're a business person and you're trying to make money in my community, you're taking money out of my community, then you should be putting money back into my community.
Yeah. I feel like, oh, go ahead.
I think it gets me too, the fact that, like, I don't know, like Alana was saying, like, people, newscasters and stuff always broadcast, like, the people who are doing good stuff, and, like, not to discredit those people who are, like, you know, the police officers or the teachers who are teaching, you know, actual black history, but we need teachers and police officers who look like us too. Like, that is important as well. And that's not, like, we can't say that just because there are people who are doing good stuff that there aren't people who are doing bad things as well. And that's, like, what the problem is, one of the main ones.
We can't ignore that. And, like,
exactly.
Even with, like, still with the curriculum and education, they don't tell us they don't talk about our history before, you know, before, like, slavery and all that. But they also don't talk about just how African Americans were, like, so crucial in the building of America itself, in the United States itself. Like, they don't talk about how Benjamin Banneker, how he pretty much drew the whole, like, Washington, D.C., like, the White House, all of that. They don't talk about stuff like that. They don't talk about how much money this country has made off of slavery and how some of these huge businesses today are still, like, eating off of that slavery money. So they just don't tell us anything.
Well, we're going to go into a quick break, and then we're going to come back. Right now, we're going to play Glory by John Legend and Common, which was actually in the new Selma movie.
Yes.
So good. We're going to get back into this music, and then we'll be right back.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory.
Glory. Glory.
Oh.
Glory. Glory.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, the spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory.
Glory. Glory.
Oh,
glory. Glory.
Now the war. down. We'll cry glory. Oh, glory. Oh. We'll cry glory. Oh, glory. Oh.
Selma is now for every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the League of Justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. The biggest weapon is to stay peaceful. We sing, our music is the cuts that we bleed through. Somewhere in the dream we had an epiphany. Now we right the wrongs in history. No one can win a war individually. It take the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory. The coming of the Lord, my eyes have seen the glory.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours.
What does freedom mean to you?
Freedom is love and care. Freedom means to do anything you want to do.
Freedom means to be responsible.
Freedom is loving who you are. Mm.
Freedom means to vote for what's right.
Freedom means being able to say yes, and freedom means being able to say no.
If you're all for freedom, clap your hands. If you're all for freedom, clap your hands. If you're all for freedom, if you're all for freedom, if you're all for freedom, clap your hands. If you're all for freedom, stamp your feet. If you're all for freedom, stamp your feet. If you're all for freedom, if you're all for freedom, if you're all for freedom, stamp your feet. If you're all for freedom, stand up and yell, yay! If you're all for freedom, stand up and yell, yay! If you're all for freedom, if you're all for freedom, if you're all for freedom, stand up and yell, yay! Clap your hands, stamp your feet, stand up and yell, yay! Freedom!
Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
We're back. Kappa's Black Student Union is here to talk about the current events and the problems in our own city, you know, with racism. And next, we're going to be talking about the movie Selma. If you haven't seen it, like, you just need to go see that movie.
You just need to go see that movie.
No, I haven't seen it. I won't stop talking about it.
You're going to see it soon.
But it definitely opened my eyes as far as, like, the importance of voting. Because, you know, not a lot of young people think that voting matters, and they think that it only matters on a large scale with, like, the president, you know? And I'm like, the president, you know, if the president is a Democrat and the House and the Senate are all Republicans, how is anything gonna get done? Like, how are they gonna, you know what I'm saying? So I think that, like, I don't know, that movie just definitely opened my eyes and just showed me how many people died, white and black, that, you know, just died just because they wanted black people to be able to vote.
Right. And how can we possibly, like, disregard their lives and, like, mm-hmm. the struggle that they went through? Like, if we don't vote, then we're, like, basically, they have died in vain. Like, their entire struggle, their fight for this movement, like,
it's pointless.
Right. So, like, that's ridiculous. And that's our only opportunity to have a voice. Like, you know, I don't know. That's
and just... I don't think people realize that it's more than just voting. Like Alana said, voting for president. I think there are so many more things to run for, and there's so many more people that want to get their feet wet and be in charge and do different things in the community. And these people are leading your future. So you really have to know what they want to do, who they are, what their plans are, because really they're helping you lead your future. And if you don't vote, and if you don't make your voice heard, and if you don't express yourself in a way that will help your community, you're only hurting your community and yourself.
Yeah,
like I was talking about, there's a judge running here, and I just learned he was a former Steeler. What's his name, Malona?
Dwayne Woodruff.
Yes. And it just blows my mind how we can be, I just, me and Marna just turned 18 and we're like excited to vote. Okay. And we want to know who's like in our community.
Exactly.
Like, we want to know who's running, like what's going on here. We want to know who our judges are, who our senator, or who our senators are. We want to know all that. So that's my take on this.
And I think it's important to like make sure you know who like is for Senate and who's going for Supreme Court judge and different things like that. Because before Obama was president, he was a senator. He had to be voted a senator, and nobody really pays attention to that. These people, like, it may be as small as, like, maybe being the mayor, for instance. You can go from being the mayor to being somebody else to being the president. Like, you really never know. Mm-hmm. And because you put these people in power, you give them the power to do different things. And when you pay attention to that, like, I have to think we have a really good mayor now. He's really nice.
I mean, I just think that, you know, like, just as young people, we think that, like, the people in those positions and, like, the people in politics are just all, like, these evil people who, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're both, like, bad, you know? And I guess because we fight so hard against, like, conforming to, like, that type of, I guess, environment, we just don't want to vote because we're like, they don't believe in anything that we believe in, which is kind of true for the most part. I feel like, especially in our generation, we definitely have a whole, like,
we're more outspoken.
We just have a whole, like, different type of philosophy on a lot of different things. But I think that also, like, our generation is about to be the generation that is, you know, running in for office. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're 18 years old, so we're definitely, you know, like going to college, studying, about to make things happen. So I'm like kind of excited what will happen in the next couple of years as far as like, you know, just voting and changing our communities and stuff. So.
Yeah, it's important to make sure that you are educated. Like you touched on a tidbit of that. I think for where we are right now, it's important to make sure that you're educated because education, no matter like how much you don't want to do your homework, education is like really the key to get to where you need to be. So it may be like a short-term inconvenience right now. Like you may not like studying for tests or doing homework or whatever, but in the end, that it trickles down to a bigger thing. It's not just, oh, I don't want to do my homework or I failed one test. Mm-hmm. It's more than that because next thing you know, it's your diploma. Then you know it's your degree. And it's when you have your degree, it's so much more important and you hold so much more power. And I don't think people really realize that and how important their education is and how that can take a spin not only for their lives but for different people that they interact with.
Mm-hmm. People don't understand, like, nowadays they say a bachelor's is equivalent to a high school, like, diploma.
Yeah.
I don't think our teachers at Kappa were ready for us. We came ready. We knew what college we were going to go to. We had all our college applications turned in by the deadline. We had internships and scholarships we wanted to apply for. We had recommendations. All our teachers were just like, okay.
Yeah, they were like, I need a breather.
We're over here, like, panicking. Like, they were not ready for us. We came so hard. Like, it was crazy.
Question, y'all. So why was Selma snubbed at the Oscars? Like, okay, we understand that Glory is a wonderful song and it definitely deserved it, but that movie was a work of art. Like, Selma was amazing, and they just... Maybe.
Selma was amazing. I was a little disappointed at the ending. I was a little upset.
Ugh, whatever.
I was a little upset.
Whatever.
But Selma it, was good really, to really be, good.
You know, open-ended. It's good. That's a good thing. I think... So, like, what do you guys think about, I don't know, like, councils and stuff, and like young people getting involved with like city council meetings, and like,
if you want to change, you gotta go say something.
Yeah,
how you could sit here and complain all day long, but if you're not going to go to the city council meetings and discussing with your community and trying to make a change, it seems like there's always like people who are older trying to go to these city council meetings, mm-hmm. and they're complaining about stuff that they really don't even like, that to us is not a lot. Mm-hmm. So I mean, well, to the younger generation, it's not a lot, but to them, it might be a lot. So we need to things that are important to us, we need to go to the city council and talk about. We need to go out there. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm older, I will be there.
And like, youth like need the forum to like be able to express these ideas and things like that. And they have to be able to like have those like environments, like the councils and stuff like that, in order to promote these different issues that they believe are important. Like, and also like getting to go to protests and stuff like that, like the one that's happening today yes. in Oakland at 6:00, like being able to get to the streets and like actually protest for what you believe in and to stand up for what you think is important. That's definitely, and along with voting, one of the things we can do.
Alrighty. Well, we're going to go hit a music break. We're going to go. Oh, actually,
we are
going to have four. Young men.
We have a treat for you.
Yeah, we have a little treat for you.
Five. Whoa. Wait,
so they just keep coming.
There's a little one.
So we have five young men. Jaconi, who is 7, Keith, 7, Matthew, 7, Marcus, 7, and little Andre, he's 3. These students are from St. Benedict de Moore, the Urban League Charter, Miller, Pittsburgh Miller, and they're going to sing a song called Dr. Martin Luther King. Hi, guys. Hi. Yeah.
Hi.
So you guys have a song for us today?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. Are you ready to sing it?
Yes.
Cool. Okay.
Ready? We're going to count to three. 1, 2, 3.
Dr. Martin Luther King was a powerful man. He was a man with a master plan. He spoke out for peace and harmony. He wanted freedom for everyone. Freedom for everyone. Freedom. Freedom. Freedom for everyone.
Freedom.
Freedom. Freedom for everyone. He marched for equality and civil rights. He fought for justice for humankind. He gave up his life for liberty and died for freedom for everyone. Freedom for everyone.
Good job, guys. That was wonderful.
You guys sounded amazing.
So much.
That was so good.
You know I'm over here about to shed tears.
That was amazing.
I can't.
Yes.
That was beautiful.
Oh, my gosh.
Thank you.
You're listening to Streaming Justice, a live four-hour webcast exploring civil rights accomplishments, challenges, and dreams for the future, and hosted by teens from throughout the region at SLB Radio Studios in the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Welcome back. This is Marna Owens, and you're listening to Streaming Justice on 88.3 FM. And we actually have a special guest today. We have Mayor Bill Petutto. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well. It's a pleasure and a surprise to be a part of this show, but looking forward to it. And as your listeners may not know, this is the second time we've had the opportunity.
Yeah, this is the second time that we had the opportunity to meet. The time before, it was before you were mayor, and you were on the Waffle Wop, and I had to make you do the Wop.
You did. Yes, you did, and I did it very poorly.
You were amazing. Yeah. You did it very well.
Hey, you know, it was a great program, and whatever happened with the one young rapper who was on right after me? I saw his name come up a few more times, and I can't remember it right now. Young white guy. What the heck was his name?
Beedy.
That's
yes.
Exactly it.
Yeah, he's doing really good. He's out making his music and traveling and doing all types of stuff. So Beedy is doing really well.
Well, that little corner of East Liberty that was started by a serial entrepreneur by the name of Justin Strong became the breeding ground of a lot of musical acts that are now international and in time will be looked at much in the way that the punk movement in New York City was looked at the 70s.
A lot
of talent had the opportunity to have a space in order to be able to let it happen and then make it expand. Wiz Khalifa, Mac Miller, the reason that they are doing what they're doing now is because they had a little location right there at the Shadow Lounge to get started.
Yeah, that's true. So today we've been talking about voting, and I know London and I just turned 18. Alexis just turned 17. So she's not there yet.
And I got 2 months.
Alana has two months. But we were talking about the importance of education and voting and how it plays such a big role in not only our community but our future, and how us as young people have to definitely take the reins and start to vote and start to do these different things because it's so important for our future, and because we are the next generation and we are the future that to come, and we want to make an impact.
The issues of like racism and police brutality.
Exactly.
Across the country, trying to educate ourselves and be active members of our community and our government. So
let's look at it a couple different ways. On a big macro scale, the millennials will represent the largest voting bloc in American history, bigger than the baby boomers or any other generation that ever came before. They're more internationally aware than any group ever before. The issues of social justice are at a top unlike other generations before, and they're not turning out to vote unlike other generations before. So it's if you look at the elections for president and you look at the past two where President Obama was able to win, and then you compare that to this past cycle, what you find is that voters under the age of 35 didn't come out. And that really made a difference and will make a difference in American history now because of the victories and losses that happen in Congress, and it will make it difficult for a president to move what he was elected to do. So there is a direct impact. When you look at it locally, there's still, in an election like mayor, very few people that vote. In fact, we have about 320,000 people in the city, and less than 45,000 people take the time to vote for mayor in a primary. There are 50,000 college students in Pittsburgh. If they just voted, they could elect all of city council and the mayor. If young people under 32 just voted, they would set the agenda of what they want to see Pittsburgh be. And like in the words of Mahatma Gandhi, be the change you want to see in the world. Yeah. You have it start here, and you have the power to do it. That vote that you have in getting your friends to vote outweighs the imbalance that's in a system that's broken. A system that where money has a lot of influence, money can't vote, people can.
We were just talking about like the importance of voting in like every single election, like because like no one person holds all of the power, so you have to vote and like try to contribute to every single you know, decision that's made.
Yeah. And if you look at things that a lot of young people care about, like climate change, the changes aren't happening out of Washington. They're happening out of state capitals and city halls. And that's really where the innovation's coming from, and the ability of a city like Pittsburgh with young people getting involved to influence that decision-making is real.
So back to, like, when we were talking about diversity and, like, just diversity in, like, our schools, in the police force and, like, different things like that, how do you think that could change? Like, why do you think there is... like 85% of our police are white?
Well, I think that when we're looking and working with organizations like the ACLU, in order not to be at points where we have to go through lawsuits to make change, but where we can work together on a in a proactive way. You know, if you fish in one pond that has a certain type of fish, you're going to catch that type of fish. If you broaden it and fish in many ponds, you'll have a lot of fish. The idea that how we recruit officers, where we're going and where we're placing the posting of those jobs has a direct effect on who's applying to be a part of the job.
Yeah.
The idea that certain groups of people don't want to be police officers is false. You look at a force like Washington, D.C., that has a very proactive recruitment, where they go to black colleges and universities, where they go to the military and look for people who are retiring and recruit actively within the minority population. Guess what you see? A force that's more diverse. But if you're only putting an ad locally and you're only going to a couple local universities that don't have diversity and expecting to change it, you'll never see the change happen. So you have to do it, and then you have to look at the top levels too of government, the people that run the boards and authorities that spend the money, the URA that does redevelopment, the parking authority, the water and sewer authority. Even though these seem removed, this is where billions of dollars get spent. And you have to make those boards and authorities reflect the diversity of the city. And that's what we've been doing.
I have a question. So, and we were moving towards education. And you know how, like, a lot of schools are being, like, shut down, like the old Shenley building, and, like, what was Rising Sun is now being, like, made into apartments. So, you know how there's like 40 students in a class. So is there any way we can change that so more students have individualized attention with their teacher?
So we have to. And you know,
yeah.
I mean, and on the education side, I know that Superintendent Dr. Lane, that's her goal too.
Yeah.
And she sort of has to walk this fine line between being able to have enough money to be able to fund education at the same time, try to keep the schools there. For me, it's a lot easier because her role is making sure that the students get the best education possible. Mine is to make sure that the schools are a part of a healthy neighborhood. So I'm going to give you guys a history lesson. Back in 1918, when World War I ended, the little city of Vienna, which at that time was the head of an empire, became the capital of a little agrarian state. And so what they ended up with was massive homelessness. All these people that were in charge of taking care of half of Europe now were in charge of just taking care of this little thing. They had lost jobs. They didn't have anywhere. So the government decided they were going to try this new program. They started building new places for people to live. But they didn't build buildings. They built communities. And the first thing they built next to that apartment building was a school. And in the school was a doctor's office. And in the school was a library that was available to the public. And in the school was all of the different things that you would think about that you need to make a neighborhood strong. So as we rebuild our neighborhoods and we are looking for ways to keep our schools open, we should be looking at creating community centers within our schools. Mm-hmm. Not just open from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. to educate our young Pittsburghers, but open to provide health clinics, opportunities in the evening, opportunities for mental health for folks that need it within a everything that one center would be able to provide a neighborhood. And that should give the schools a little bit of revenue to be able to keep those schools open. So that's where we're moving in the big picture and working with some groups nationally and locally to get us there. But the idea of just boarding up a school and then thinking that that neighborhood's going to be able to stay a community isn't a reality. So we have to make sure that those that infrastructure's there.
Also, like, we were talking about, like, the issue of teachers and the lack of diversity, because, like, at our school, we only have, like, one African-American instructor in our entire school. And how do you think that's the same issue as the police force? Like, we don't put, like, recruitment offers, like, in the right places?
Yeah,
or?
I do. I think that, you know, especially within education, there's nobody who's even saying that any one group doesn't want to be teachers. It's the most diverse pool. There's people that want to teach children, and that's the mission that they get from a very early time in their life, and that's what they want to do. It's a vocation, and it goes across everything. You find people from wealthy families that want to be teachers, families that are poor, every type of demographic you can think of. So, yeah, it really becomes, you know, how far are we stretching the net to find the best talent? And then when you start doing that, you're going to find that you find more diversity just because you're looking beyond a certain limit.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the first step would be in, like, trying to get that to happen?
Well, I haven't really had an opportunity to talk to Dr. Lane about it, and I don't want to. It's sort of a fine line for me about, you know, going into what her authority is and the school board's authority. But I really do think that we may be able to help with what we're doing within policing, and we're calling on some national experts to help us to be able to figure it out. I think that there's probably a very similar path in how you recruit. The basics of creating a professional police force is how you recruit, how you retain, because not every police officer who gets a badge should stay a police officer their whole career, and how you promote, and you have to promote based on merit. And I think the same three things apply to teachers. If you want good teachers, how you recruit, how you retain, and then how you promote. And once good teachers are in a system like that, they'll want to do better. And it will help itself and lend itself to making that organization more diverse.
I'm just curious as to why are a lot of our police officers in our police force from our community? Are they from... Like, if you're going to be patrolling, you know, Homewood, do you know Homewood?
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, if you, and there's a big argument whether or not every officer should be required to live within the city. But if you look at a map of where the officers presently live, it's not throughout the whole city. It's within certain neighborhoods. And it's really the folks within those neighborhoods who are saying, we want to keep them here. I want to keep professional officers no matter where it is they live. I want to make sure that they're the best officers that we have. But at the same time, we can do both. What we don't have and what we want to be able to create is a recruitment program that starts in high school. So when you are a junior and you have an interest in becoming a police officer, you get a summer job and you're working with the police bureau. And then your senior year, you get another one. You're making a little bit of money while doing this. And then using the Pittsburgh Promise and creating a program that starts out at UPMC to get you those, because you have to have 60 credits to become a police officer, get you those first 60 credits in criminal justice, so you're learning it. And then being able to apply to become a cadet with a little bit of a bonus having gone through this program. And if you're able to earn it, becoming a police officer now, you don't have to have someone learning about Homewood because they were born and raised in Homewood. They went to Westinghouse. Mm-hmm. They understand it. And you can hit the diversity. What that requires is, number one, this is already being done. So we're not creating something. Washington, D.C. does this. It requires a partnership with the schools in order to be able to do it. But it would be great because in the summers, young people would be making some money while learning more about the thing that they want to do.
Yeah,
that's perfect.
I just wanted to know your, because we were talking about gentrification, and I live in like Garfield, East Liberty, so like that neighborhood, like Penn Avenue, everything around there has changed so much from since I was a young girl, and I mean, it gives me mixed feelings because I feel like the people that are moving their businesses in my neighborhood, they're not doing anything to put money back into the community. And I feel like if you're going to come, kind of like with the police force, but not as like, you know, like I feel like if you're going to have a business in a community, in a neighborhood, then you should try to help that community build. And like, I don't know, I just think about like, I live up the hill from two huge restaurants. And people up the hill can't afford to go to those restaurants. Nope. So that just, I don't know, it makes me feel like, you know, you need to give back to us if you're going to be here.
Yeah. So, guy sitting right behind you, Dearborn Street, born, raised, lives. Oh. And another guy from our office in the mayor's office just moved in. So I can say there's two people out of about the 20 or so we have in the hall that are Garfield. Garfield's changing quickly. People don't even see it.
Yeah.
And it's happening not just on Penn Avenue, but people who are coming in and buying homes and then restoring them because they're beautiful homes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you would move one of those homes from Garfield to Squirrel Hill, they'd sell for like $400,000. I mean, they're beautiful. They've got wood. They've got foundations that will be there for another 100 years. So people are starting to understand that. Gentrification isn't when something new comes in. Gentrification is when somebody is displaced because something new came in. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to be cognizant of. The best way to be able to stop gentrification but to allow neighborhoods to become fully restored is to create home ownership programs for those that presently live there, because nobody can displace you from your own home. And when people rent, then they're in the situation where they're being forced out. In those areas, we have to be able to have both a program that's seeing new housing happen, because that's how you have enough money to keep our schools open and have the police on the street, but also an affordable housing policy that makes sure that there's affordable housing all throughout the city. 1950s, there was a different idea. It was, we'll create affordable housing and we'll put all the people here. Mm-hmm. And they'll all be, and then we expected different results when you had people who were struggling with the issues around poverty, trying to help each other to get out of it, instead of having it where it was mixed and where there was examples of how success could happen and a young person could see it. So we want to be able to change that model now and be able to make it so that it's happening all throughout the city. Affordable housing, while at the same time seeing new development happen. I can tell you this, I've been in city government for over 20 years, so I got involved in East Liberty when the first community plan was being put together, and there were like 8 people around a table, and then there were several hundred that were involved later on. And back then, East Liberty was the number one area in Western Pennsylvania for drive-by shootings. You know, today you see a very different model, but it's got to be a model for the next 20 years that has a place for everyone. And so we're going to be revisiting the plan and making sure that that happens.
Now, as of lately, we talked about this in the beginning of our segment, how situations in Ferguson happen and how the Black community is sort of pushing back against racism and pushing back against discrimination in different situations like that. Even here, like this today at 6 o'clock,
there's a protest.
There's a protest and a march. So we're marching from Fifth Avenue to downtown. How do you plan on helping the Black community fight against racism and the different things? Because I know different projects are being taken place and different actions are taking place in different states to help combat racism. How do you plan on helping that Black community in that situation?
So with today's march, it's important to take a look around while you're there. In years past, and even I would say last year or the year before, a protest like this would have officers in full riot gear. You'd have police dogs. You'd have SWAT vehicles as you march in certain locations. You would have an atmosphere which almost makes it feel like the stakes have been risen to a point where something like a peaceful demonstration that's guaranteed to you on the day that you're born in this country under the First Amendment is being limited or taken away. When you're there today, you'll see whoever the commander is, whether it's the commander or the lieutenant on the scene, walking up to find the organizer, giving them their cell number, telling them, if you need anything, please let us know. You'll see officers on bicycles that are there to be able to help to make sure that vehicles aren't there. And you'll see that at any time that the roads are being closed as the march continues, that officers are helping and assisting to make sure that people are safe. I think that the reason that you don't see what's happened in Ferguson after the aftermath of Ferguson, it's because when you look at the officers in Ferguson, they're wearing shields. They're wearing armor. They're wearing a way that says we're not here to be able to protect and serve your right to demonstrate. We're here to, in a way that's almost militaristic. So we've taken the other approach, and we have it so that we're allowing, not only allowing, because there's nothing for us to allow, you have the right. We are assisting the legal rights of people to follow their First Amendment right to protest, to assemble, and to be able to have freedom of speech. The other thing is you know, it became very controversial at the end of the year when our police chief held up a sign that said that he would work to end racism in his workplace, and that had a hashtag of end white silence. It wasn't controversial. I mean, I can't think of in any workplace where somebody who has the ability to have control over workplace development, where they wouldn't want to end racism in that workplace. There is none. There, every whether it's a corporate CEO, whether it's a police chief, whether it's anybody, that's one thing you want to be able to do. The more controversial part came with the hashtag end white silence. And to so many people, it said, well, you're saying that there are those in your workplace who are white who are racist. And that's not the point. And that wasn't the point. The point was, is that for so many white people, it's very uncomfortable to talk about race issues. How can a white person be an expert on race issues if they've never had to deal with it? I mean, just how can a guy talk about issues on sexism and feel that they can talk about it? It's not comfortable. It's not easy. But, you know, if you looked at Dr. King and when he marched, you'd see white ministers marching behind him and next to him. And it's only when you get all sides to be able to do and help and pull together that great things happen. So ending the white silence simply means, yeah, it may be uncomfortable, but now's the time to be able to say we can do something about this. This is not unsolvable. Right. So those are the things we've been doing.
Alrighty. Well, after such a deep, well-needed discussion, we're going to wrap it up.
Yep. Let me share one last thing, because I wanted to find a quote from Dr. King today to put on Twitter. I know, that sounds so trivial, doesn't it?
Yes, at us.
Yes, at us.
So there's the ones we always see and that we always read, and I tried to find one that I hadn't read before, and I think it speaks a lot to what we can all do. True compassion is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. It comes to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. And so how many times do we hear, you know, that charity is, shouldn't, government shouldn't be involved in it? Well, there's a reason government is involved, because the systems themselves create the disparity. And if we can work not just by throwing some dollar to it or saying, well, somebody can do that on their own, mm-hmm. but try to change the system so that everyone has an opportunity, not a handout, but an opportunity, then we can make these big changes happen.
Wow. Yeah. I haven't even heard that one before. I got to, like, retweet
That's
you.
That's a great one. Yeah.
I have
yeah.
to retweet
yeah.
you. Well, all right, guys. If you want to go and do some things for Dr. Martin Luther King, there's some things at the Union Project, and there's also that march we've been talking about in Oakland.
You Kelly wanna, Strayhorn in East Liberty.
Yes.
I'm going to
yes.
be up there and over at the Mattress Factory. You know the beautiful thing about the four? Children's Museum, Mattress Factory, Kelly Strayhorn, and Union Project all involves young people, the arts, and yes. social mm-hmm. change. What a wonderful yes. combination.
Yeah.
And additionally, we're all from Kappa's Black Student Union, and we have events a lot, like, throughout the year. So just, like, stay updated. Like, follow us on Facebook. And,
yes. Kappa Black Student Union.
Yeah. So thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.